Before I get started, I wanted to make sure I give a big shout out to Jeannie Colwin Coaching. Jeannie Colwin is a stress and mind body coach out of Los Angeles, and you might remember that she guest hosted my podcast back in January, earlier this year, came on live with me in August of 2021, and of course I had her on live with me a couple of months ago, episode 238 on Stress Talk. Jeannie spent 16 years battling fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, and a myriad of other chronic symptoms that left her both physically and mentally exhausted. She healed herself completely, and now she's obsessed with getting her clients fast results through her one-on-one coaching program. In her program, clients learn how to decrease stress, release stuck negative emotions, and finally heal that chronic pain. Are you feeling stuck in your journey? Frustrated because you're familiar with these TMS concepts but haven't seen much improvement? Are you sick of everyone talking about healing and feeling their emotions because you don't know how to do it? Perhaps you're now realizing that you can't keep doing this on your own. If that's you, Jeannie offers a free 45-minute consult where you'll identify what's holding you back so you can take your next steps for healing. Go to her website, that's jeanniekulwin.com, JeannieKulwin, and book your free call to see if it's a good fit. Welcome back. It is Thursday, October the 13th. Let me give a big shout out to the patrons of the podcast. If you're interested in contributing to this podcast, helping keep it on the air for free, you can join these other 26 people that have decided to throw a few bucks in the tip jar. Go to patreon.com/themindandfitnesspodcast. I want to give a big shout out to Daniel and Kirk and Emily and Brent, Paul, Amanda, Elise, Enda, Dominic, Sasha, Sylvie, James, John, Jason, Mindy, Irina, Kelly, Tony, Michael, Mike, Christina, Ross, Julie, Brian, Arnie, and Barb. Thank you all so much, all of you, for continuing to support the podcast week after week and month after month and year after year for many of you. That's awesome. And actually, last week I celebrated, I didn't even know until it came across on my Time Hop app, but 5 years of doing this podcast. That's 244. This is 245 episodes of the podcast, which is just crazy to think that it's been on for that long. That it's been going on for that long. So super happy that you're all here and continuing to listen and continuing to support and continue to be a part of it. So I definitely thank you all. Today's podcast is a great interview. From the other side of the world. In fact, we had a challenge getting this thing scheduled because our time zones were so wonky. But Gemma McFall, who is out of Dubai, I believe, we talked in length and in depth about how she uses a personality survey, the Gallup survey, to help work with clients on their chronic pain issues. And I think it's a really fascinating, interesting way to look at it, an interesting angle. And I think you're really going to love this. So without further ado, this is Gemma McFall and I. Welcome back to the Mind and Fitness Podcast. I am your host, Eddie Lindenstein, and it's my favorite type of interview. It is a recovery story that has become somebody who now does this and helps people across the world, and she is literally across the world from me. Gemma McFall, are you on the line? Can you hear me?
Yes, I am. Thank you, Eddie. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. It's been a couple of months that we've kind of been going back and forth over email, but it's very nice to connect with you. I think this interview will take a little bit of a different turn than maybe most of them, because I feel like a lot of times there's sort of a certain formula to these. But the things that you talked about in the email are things that I have no exposure to. So I'm excited for this.
Yeah, me too.
So let's just start with like I can hear the accent. It's lovely. Where on earth are you?
So the accent's confusing. So I'm British, but I'm actually in Dubai. I'm based in Dubai.
Oh, cool. Okay. Awesome. So we're my local time, it's 9:30 in the morning. And one of the challenges that we had was figuring out time zones. Where on earth are you? Or what time on the clock is it for you right now?
So it's bedtime. It's like 8:35.
Okay.
I've just put the kids to bed.
It's funny when I like, this isn't quite as drastic or dramatic, but like when I've tried to do or done interviews with people like in Australia or New Zealand, like it is really, I mean, there's not one single good time. I found myself having, this was like years ago, when I didn't have a day job or I was focusing on more consulting work, but you know, it'd be 11 PM for me and it would be 9:30 AM or 10 AM or something like that for them. So, so thanks for spending your evening with us today.
Thanks.
So, you've got a really great story. You had 10 years of back pain. There was a journey there. I'd love to start there. Kind of understand when it was that started, how old you were when that started, and what was it? Did you get a diagnosis, that kind of thing? So kind of just let's start there. Let's start back there.
Yeah. How long have we got? No, I'm just kidding. So I used to live in London, and we decided to become expats and expatriates and move to Dubai, me and my boyfriend at the time. And basically, I had a dance injury, doing some stupid acrobatic move, 2 weeks before we were leaving. And so I went on to tablets and all the usual stuff, moved to Dubai. And then over a I'm fast forwarding the story a lot, but over the period of sort of like 8 years, it never really got better. And it's the same as everyone's story. I started with tablets and I did physio, and I got rid of all my high shoes. I did spinal injections, osteopaths. I tried everything.
Yeah.
I had the stupid MBT shoes and everything. Anyway, and at the same time we were in Dubai, I was, just to put it into context, because I know it's the TMS community, I was ignoring the pain to a large degree. So during these 8 years, I was working in a corporate job. So I'd leave the house at 7:30 in the morning and I'd get back at 7:30 at night on a good day.
Yeah.
And I had two kids during this time. And then at the end of this 8 years, my husband was offered a job in Sri Lanka. So we left everything we knew in Dubai, moved to Sri Lanka, which is a developing country. And that is when the pain went to the next level.
What? just so I have some context, what year did you go to Sri Lanka?
We got there on January 1, 2017.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
So literally we arrived on the first day of the year, and by the end of that January, I was lying on the floor every day. I couldn't do anything at all. I couldn't even pick up my daughter, Chloe, and she was 6 months. I couldn't put her into the high chair.
Mm-hmm.
And then Chris went to Abu Dhabi on a business trip and left me in a country. This makes him sound like a horrible person. It's not at all. Like, it's very normal for him to travel. But suddenly I found myself in a country with, I had like one friend I'd just met in the building, and I couldn't move at all. So I had to quickly hire somebody to help me with the kids while he was away.
Yeah.
And then from there, it very quickly got to the point. I flew back to Dubai from the spinal injection. I had one in Sri Lanka, which was horrendous, because don't ever do a spinal injection in Sri Lanka. And then I was looking into surgery, and that's when I found the book, the magic book, the Sano book.
You know, one thing I'm curious about, because, you know, people on the outside that might have no knowledge of this kind of stuff, like if I were an outsider and I were to hear you say that you moved to Sri Lanka in 2017 and your pain became debilitating and you were basically stuck on the floor, as an outsider, you'd probably start to think there was something environmental or there was something about that area specifically. Did that ever cross your mind at the time? Because, you know, you hadn't found the book yet, so there probably wasn't much of a thought around correlation of stress. Did you just think that you, I don't know, re-aggravated this old dance injury? Or like, was there anything about the environment in Sri Lanka that made you think that there was something going on in that regard?
No. So I always believed it was from the dance injury because I heard, hear it click. That was when it started, And then in Sri Lanka, we were having to take, do you know what tuk-tuks are? The little three little carts that drive you around the town before we had a car. And this was really aggravating my back because it's I'm doing the school run on a tuk-tuk was I can't even describe it. It's like electric shock going through my spine. But I never really thought it was because of Sri Lanka. But what I did think was really interesting, I flew back to Dubai on my own. I left the kids with my husband. I flew back to Dubai to get a spinal injection. And from the minute I sat on the aeroplane before it took off, I had no pain whatsoever. So I didn't move a muscle the whole flight. I did, like you normally wriggle in your seat. I didn't move. I was slightly leaning to one side and I stayed like that for the whole flight because I thought, this is great. I have no pain. But then I had no pain when I got off the plane. I had no pain the whole time we were in Dubai. But I'd gone there for a spinal injection. So I still had to go through with the injection. So the whole time I was in Dubai, I was Googling things like altitude difference between Sri Lanka and Dubai.
Did you find any? Just curious. Was there any? Do you remember?
No, but isn't that so funny now when I look back on it? And I was trying to work out what's the difference. But I was sitting in a friend's house at her swimming pool on my own with no kids in perfect relaxation, perfect weather, and wondering why I had no pain.
I had a, I don't think I've ever talked about this. That I had a similar kind of a similar experience where I was in the throes of it, and I went and did a trip to Florida, where the weather is dramatically nicer than it is in Seattle most of the time. And I had suddenly no pain, right? I was away from, and this is probably what you're going to get to, but I was away from my responsibilities. I was away from my kids. I was away from my job. I was living on my, doing my own thing and doing the, like going to see the stuff that I love. And then, yeah, when I got home, it was all right back to the way that it was. So that's funny. That's a funny experience. And not something that's, I mean, Sarno talks about that specific thing, like not having pain when you go on vacation, as an example.
Exactly. And to be honest, the whole time I was in Dubai, it wasn't all the time. It was on and off, on and off. And if I track back now, I can see exactly when it was at its worst. I was a HR director, so it was once a year when we were doing the budget review for the following year because I hate numbers. So, yeah.
So you did go through with the injection in Dubai.
Yeah, I
Okay,
did, because
okay.
that's what I'd flown there for.
Yeah.
So I had to do it. It's a big waste of money if I fly all the way there and then
Yeah.
not have it.
So what happened over the subsequent days, weeks, and months after that?
So I went back to Sri Lanka, and another thing I didn't mention here is leaving Dubai also meant I was leaving my career. For the first time ever, I started working alongside study and everything from the age of 14, and I had never, ever, ever not had a job. So moving to Sri Lanka with my partner's job meant that for the first time ever, it was just me. So me and the kids, and he'd go out to work, and I would think, now what? What do I do until he gets home? And so I'd already made the decision to retrain as a coach. So I was doing coach training alongside the pain, and actually the way it came out, we do peer coaching with each other in a group setting. So somebody was coaching me. They had 20 minutes to coach me, and she said, "What do you want coaching on?" And I said, "I want someone to cut my spine out because I can't keep living like this." This poor girl's trying to learn to be a coach. She had 20 minutes to coach me on this. But at the end of the 20 minutes, the teacher on the call, who was supposed to give her feedback on her coaching, he said, "Look, I'm going to recommend a book to you. Go and read it." And that's all he said. He didn't even tell me what the book was about. So I then bought the book the same day because I was desperate. And I read two chapters, I think, one or two chapters. And I was like, yeah, this is it. That's it. And then literally then I knew I could do something about it.
What year do you recall? Like what year this would have been?
Oh gosh. Oh, it was 2017
Okay.
because it was when I just moved. It was like a few months after I'd moved there, so it must have been like May or something
Okay.
of that first year.
That's funny. I don't remember if you had said this in some of our back and forth on either on social or on email, but yeah, I started reading it at the end of June of 2017. And I've talked to quite a few people who had that same kind of that's well, at least in the United States, the spring or early summer of 2017, that's where they found the book. So maybe there was something in the air.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe a big marketing campaign on
What
Amazon or something.
what was there anything that you and it's a lot of years ago, so I totally understand if you don't remember, but were there what specific things were said in those first couple of chapters, or even general things were said in the first couple of chapters that made you believe, oh yeah, this is what I've been experiencing.
Personality.
Okay.
That was it. Yeah, the rest of the book, at that point when I was reading the book, I was like, no, I had a perfect childhood. But, no. But it was the personality stuff. And I tick yes to like all the TMS traits. And also the science just makes sense, It just makes sense. It's hard to dispute what the book's talking about.
What like general acceptance wise in your part of the world, because here, I mean, it's getting quite a bit better. I mean, there's even like we're for instance, like the United States is we're like one of the only countries on earth that has pharmaceutical commercials all the time about all sorts of drugs and everything's got a physical cause and all this. There's a little bit more acceptance, but it's kind of on the peripheral because a lot of it has to do with like mindfulness, maybe being connected to a stomach ache, like just this very basic stuff. Is there any kind of consciousness around this concept on more of an in mass scale in your part of the world or not really?
That's a really great question because when I had TMS, well, not when I had it, or, I mean when I found out about it, I was living in Sri Lanka, and so the medical system there, they'll give you tablets for everything. They'll give you like more than they need to. But on the other hand, it's also a country that's very big on meditation and yoga. Like people go there to learn yoga. There's silent retreats. Everything is natural, So I doubt anybody in the whole of the island of Sri Lanka has ever heard of TMS. But I would say a large portion of them are naturally doing these kind of keeping their nervous system regulated. And from a work-life balance point of view, in Dubai, because we'd gone from Dubai to there, in Dubai, you never leave your desk on time. Like that is. Why would you do
Oh, yeah.
that? People don't rush home to their family. But in Sri Lanka, it's completely the opposite. The second it's like 5 minutes before they're about to finish for the day, they'll start packing up because what's most important to them is family. They only work so they have enough money for their family. Of course, I'm generalizing. Not every person in Sri Lanka is like this, but the work-life balance that they have spot on. And now, we've come back to Dubai. We've been posted back here, and straight away, I can see it. But from the medical system here, everyone's an expatriate that's working here. We're all on visas, and so usually with a contract, you get health insurance. And so if I have back pain, I can get on like as much surgery as I want, or pills or whatever. But to get any alternative treatment is hard.
You know, I want to take a couple steps back. So, as you were talking about culture in Sri Lanka, I was having like a deja vu moment. I'm like, I just could have sworn I've heard this somewhere. And I just went over to my email and just typed in Sri Lanka. And I had totally forgot. You wrote me this email on April 9th of 2020. And you said, it would be interesting to know if Sri Lankans are less susceptible to TMS because they are relaxed about life. They believe family comes before work always. The working hours are very short, and we have more public holidays than anywhere else. There's no urgency to get anything done, and we'll make their jobs stretch for the whole day. There's no aggressive need to get promoted at work because they truly believe the length of service and loyalty is what gets you promoted, not hard work. So interesting. Which I mean, sounds like that thought thought has not changed in the last two and a half years.
I was holding my breath as you were reading that. I was thinking, I can hardly remember writing that email.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I replied to it. We had a back and forth. That's really interesting stuff. I totally, that's very interesting. I know there's parts of the world that, they're just very different. So I'm always very curious to know, especially in parts of the world that might have more of a universal healthcare approach versus the United States, which is more of a private insurance is the only way really, in a lot of ways. I mean, I wish that was a little bit different, but I'm very curious about different parts of the world. Okay. So you had this 10-year journey with back pain. You're at this point where you've read the book. You know, this is what's going on.
Yeah.
How do you get to the point? Like, when do you start having a cessation of symptoms? When do they start falling back?
There was like a sigh of relief. I think it knocked itself off immediately a little bit.
Yeah.
And then what happened? So yeah, I tell you what happened, and this is why I do what I do now. I got a voluntary job in my son's school, just to help out. And it was a nursery school, so it wasn't very many hours. So I would go in with him at 8:30, stay there, and I would, because I used to work in, you know, training and stuff. So it was really good for me to walk around and help the teachers and things. And then I would come home at 11:30 or 12:30 or something. And what I realized straight away, I had no pain while I was at the school. Every single day I had no pain in the morning and then pain in the afternoon. So then I started thinking, well, why? What is it about that school? Because it was just a school, you know? What was it about that job that made the pain go away? And then I realized I was using all the things that I'm naturally really good at.
Yeah.
And then when I got home in the afternoon to an empty house where there's like nothing to do apart from cooking and cleaning, I was bored. So then I would have pain because I was bored. And so then I realized, okay, so I need to tap into more of what I'm good at so that I go into a state of flow. You know what I mean by flow?
Yeah.
You know, when time flies,
yep,
and you're just, you know, just having, yeah, you can lose a whole afternoon when you're in flow. And something that I really love to do is learn. I just love learning anything at all. And so I started watching TED Talks. Like every day I'd watch one TED Talk, because while I'm learning from this TED Talk, I had no pain. So then I would get another 20 minutes of no pain.
Yeah.
So gradually, I started packing more things into my day. So it didn't feel like I was like a stay-at-home. Well, I was learning to be a coach, but I was like a stay-at-home mom. It didn't feel like I was that anymore because I was doing all these things that were lighting me up.
Yep.
And then at the same time, because I was using this kind of approach of like, well, what lights me up? Well, then what doesn't light me up? And I know I'm not good in crowds of people. And when you're an expatriate and you first arrive somewhere, you have to make friends with people for kind of like for survival. So I was trying to make friends with people, and we were going out for big lunches, like with many, many people. And the sitting in a group environment like that with so many people, I find really drains me. So I can keep smiling through the lunch, but then I'd get home and I'd crash. So then I started tweaking that and going out with just two people or three people. Or if I had to go out, I would sit on the very end of the table, so I was kind of away from the majority of everyone. Does that make sense?
Yep. So I'd love to shift a little bit. I want to get, because I want to make sure we've got a good amount of time to go through this. You had talked about this tool called, because now you're a TMS practitioner. You're helping people around the world, right?
Yeah.
So you use this tool called, and I hope I don't butcher the pronunciation, the Gallup Clifton Strengths. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm fascinated, based on the small amount that you told me about it. Talk to me about what this is.
So this is a personality profiling tool, basically. So it's the first, it's what I used on me for my own recovery, mm-hmm. because at the time it's the only thing I knew about. I didn't know about all these Facebook groups and I hadn't read any other books or anything. I just knew I had to regulate my nervous system. And this is the only way I knew how. So I now put all clients through this before I even meet them for the first session. It takes about 45 minutes to answer hundreds of questions. And then you get a report which says, these are your top five strengths. But I know everyone's done Myers-Briggs and, you know, all these DISC assessment, but this one I think is so different because it's got words like for example, I have achiever in my top five. I have learner. And these are words that you can remember, first of all. I've done DISC twice and I couldn't tell you what my thing is in DISC. So it's words that you really resonate with. And so I help people to see where they're using their strengths. We call them strengths, like where they're using their strengths in a good way and where they're either sometimes they're not using them at all. They've got these amazing inbuilt natural talents or strengths and they're not using them. And that's one of the reasons for their TMS. Or sometimes they have these great strengths and they're using them way too much, which causes stress. For example, my achiever was just killing me. It was in overdrive.
And that means you were trying to achieve too much.
Yes. Okay. So if you naturally have the strength achiever, it means I get great energy from ticking things off a task list, mm-hmm. and also from taking jobs. So I would take jobs that are not even my jobs because it feels so good to take them. And then I tick them off as fast as I can because that feels really good as well. And I can definitely see how that was one of my biggest stressors. And then in some clients, it's a case of like they've got these great strengths, but for whatever reason, they've been told not to use them. So for example, like as a child, for example, they were told not to use them. So communication, let's say, if you are naturally got this strength of communication, but you grew up in a family where your parents were saying, be quiet all the time.
Yeah.
What they're basically saying is, don't be you. We don't want to see your strengths. We don't want to see your natural talents. We want you to be as quiet as possible. And we want you to be a bit more like the rest of the family. That makes sense?
It does. Because the achiever thing, as you were talking about it, I'm thinking about the, like to me, at least in Sarno speak, that would be the perfectionist. Like achiever is the perfectionist. Is that accurate?
See, this is where I have a bit of a different view on this.
Okay.
I think when I read all the stuff about TMS, I hear these personality traits as if they're a bad thing. Like perfectionist is a negative thing. Overthinker. It's like a mistake. Like you were born an overthinker, which is a really bad thing. And then now, therefore, you've got pain. But if I was to convert this into strengths language, if we take the overthinker one first, there's a strength called deliberative. And people with deliberative are really, really good thinkers. And they get most energy when they have a lot of time and space to think about whatever it is that they need to think about. This gives them energy, but it becomes bad for them, as in like could be a trigger for TMS when they start thinking too much. So I think all the TMS traits in some way can be linked back to StrengthsFinder, but I think they're all good. So the one you said, was it perfectionist?
That was from the Sarno book, but yeah, perfectionist.
So perfectionist could be different things. So for me, if I have achiever, I need to tick things off as fast as possible. So yeah, that, I want to be perfect. I want to get it in by the deadline. So I would tick it off. And therefore it could be achiever. But there's also loads of other strengths it could be. Like there's a strength called responsibility. So people with responsibility will never, ever, ever let anybody down, ever. They'll never, ever miss a deadline.
Yeah.
And responsibility strength shows up very different to someone with achiever. So I think having this assessment that can help you kind of pick it all apart and see, well, why exactly am I a perfectionist? Is it because of responsibility? Is it because of achiever? Or is it because of something else? Like, there's 34 different strengths it could be.
So, you know, one thing I'd love to do, and it, obviously no names of clients, it's probably the easiest way to think about maybe a client that you've worked with, but like, maybe just like pick a strength, and then go into what sort of questions or path or how would you work with somebody once you know what a strength is? Like, just pick one and then, and then give us an example of some questions that you might ask to dig a little deeper.
Okay. So let's take strategic.
Okay.
But if you can just get like strategic in StrengthsFinder language means that you're a very, very quick thinker, faster than anybody else that you know, which is great. And so someone with this strength can decide which direction to, let's say in a work situation, they can decide which direction to take the project in very, very quickly. And other people will get a lot of energy from being with that person.
Yeah.
But the frustration from a TMS point of view would come when they're sitting in that meeting room and nobody has a clue how they've got to that decision because they're such a fast thinker that they've left everybody else in the dust. And it's hard sometimes, but if they don't have as well strength of communication, sometimes someone with strategic hasn't got the ability to verbalize why they got to the decision they got to.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. So, yeah. And then of course that it always comes back to relationships. So if you've got someone in the room with strategic, or let's say a husband and wife, one's got strategic and the other's got deliberative, that's two polar opposites almost. You've got one that needs time and space to think, and you've got the other one that needs that can come up with an instant split second decision. So the usually in a relationship, one party will end up just kind of thinking that the other is better. So let's say the man has strategic and the woman has deliberative. The woman, let's say, would be like, oh, he's better than me because he can come up with decisions really, really quickly. But he might not have come up with the right decision.
Right.
It's just he's a really quick thinker.
He's decisive.
Exactly. And then the other way around, the man might think, well, the woman is, why can't she make any decisions? And so very quickly, there's this like, in relationships, you see the tension between the two parties because everybody wants each other to be like they are. That makes sense. Like we it's quite interesting when you look at marriage actually, because we marry someone typically or attracted to someone who is the opposite to us.
Yep.
So a highly empathetic person might be attracted to someone that's got, let's say, the strength command. And yeah. Command is very... Sorry, go ahead.
What that brings to mind for me, this could totally be wrong. There's a scene in... we've talked about Sons of Anarchy, and you said that you watched it, so that's in a different part of the world. But is Seinfeld a thing in your part of... Like, do people watch Seinfeld in the Middle East or in the other parts of the world? Is that show popular?
No.
No? So...
Well, not in my circle.
Okay. So Jerry Seinfeld, he's a comedian. He's out of New York. And... His way of delivery is very over the top, is probably not right, but he has this epiphany in his show Seinfeld where he's talking about all these years he's come to the conclusion that he hates himself, and he's joking, like it's like a joking thing. But part of me has always wondered, at least since I heard him say that, and I say this sort of half kidding, but people being attracted to the opposite, because I know that's a thing, and as you had said, is it because maybe there's an underlying, God, I really hate everything about myself, so I'm going to go find something that is the opposite of myself. So it's funny that you bring that up because I've had that thought for a long time. And I always think about that scene in Seinfeld.
Yeah, you could be right. We look for someone that's going to complete us.
Yeah.
So like highly empathetic would go for, I'm just guessing, but like highly empathetic might go for someone with command who seems super strong and in control and decisive. But then what happens is it's like great during the honeymoon phase because like, oh, we're so in love. But then you get married and then you have kids. And then whatever, like you start realizing that you're irritating each other. So the highly empathetic side would be saying to the other one, why can't you be a bit more empathetic? Why can't you have like more understand my feelings? So what she's basically saying is, why can't you be more like me and less like yourself?
Yeah.
And a command one would be saying like, why can't you be a bit more assertive? Stand up for yourself. Stop being so empathetic. Oh, so he's, and so then what happens is both parties in the relationship trying to change each other. You've got one trying to make the other more empathetic, the other trying to make the other more command. And typically one person will just back down and give up.
Yeah.
And what? I think that's a TMS trigger for sure.
What? Okay. So you have a new client, you take them through this assessment, which by the way, you brought it up at the end of the email. I would love to go through this with you at some point, maybe not today, but I would love to at some point in the fairly near future. Cause I am very curious about my own, what are they? But you go through this with somebody, you have, diagnosis isn't the right word, but you now understand what their strengths are. What is that? How then do you use that?
It depends on their reaction to the results. So before I meet them, they get a report with like almost like a story about who they are. And it's quite scary when you read it, how accurate it is. But some clients will come on the call and they'll say, yeah, okay, no surprises here. I could have told you that. I know I'm all of these things. And so that, from there, that's great. So from there, we start to look at examples of how these strengths show up for them at home or at work or in relationships or even in parenting. And we start to see where, we call it balcony and basement, where they're using it in the balcony is where it's really serving them. And where they're in the basement is where it's not serving them anymore. They're just annoying everybody by using their strengths too much. Yeah. And they're annoying themselves, you know. And so it's almost like a dimmer switch. I show them, you have the ability to turn up and down the volume on these different strengths as and when you need them. But if you're going to turn down achiever a little bit, you better turn something else up. Otherwise you're not you anymore. So it's about helping them to be who they should be. Like they've always had these strengths that they never change over time. They just get better and better and stronger and stronger. And so I help them to see what their strengths are so that they can start intentionally using them on purpose. And that's when you go into flow.
How can somebody apply these things and apply what you're talking with them about and the strengths language that they have? How can they apply that with the purpose of pain? Like you had 10 years of back pain. If somebody would have come to you, did this assessment, gave you your strengths, how could you have used that and applied that with the back pain?
So let's say, I'll tell you what I actually did, like, because I coached myself on it. So I have communication in my top five and I wasn't really using it at all. Like I talk to friends, but I wasn't serving the world with it. I wasn't really maximizing on it. So I signed up for Toastmasters. Do you know what Toastmasters is?
I do know what Toastmasters is, yes. I mean, well, for the people that don't know, it's basically a public speaking club, right? That's the idea.
Yeah. So this is a bit out there, but I signed up for Toastmasters because in Sri Lanka. So I think I was the only Westerner in the whole of Sri Lanka doing Toastmasters. but what this does, when you invest time and energy into developing your strengths, you learn so fast.
Yeah.
And so I was like absorbing this information week on week on week. And because I have learner as well, I knew I needed to learn something to make me feel alive. And I knew I needed to learn something that would help me push one of my other strengths, which was communication. And so very quickly, I went from kind of I'd been in training for a long time, but I learned so much so quickly and it just boosted my confidence so much. And when I'm doing it, when I'm speaking on stage, I never felt more alive, you know, and it's very difficult to have chronic pain and feel really alive at the same time.
Okay, so one thing that makes me think about is that, my second favorite musician of all time is Lady Gaga. And I went and saw her in San Francisco about a month ago. And she had a documentary that came out probably maybe 5 years ago. Maybe 3 years ago. In this documentary, she's talking about fibromyalgia. She's preparing for shows. She has, you know, she has body workers, everybody working on her to make her body feel okay enough to go out and perform. And then she goes out to perform, and she says that her pain completely goes away on stage. And I think it's what you're talking about, right? Like that's the most alive really that somebody could feel, I would guess, as a performer and performing in front of, I mean, at the stadium we were at, it was 55,000 people. And to go from being in such debilitating pain that you can't get out of bed to then going and do, you know, dancing for 3 hours and performing for 3 hours and somehow not feeling pain as a, you know, a Sarno descendant, which I sort of feel like I am. I feel like I know exactly what's going on, but, and you used the example earlier where like you're essentially embedded in something that you're really good at or really enjoy. Like you had talked about learning and watching the TED Talks and stuff, and the pain isn't there and doesn't exist. It also reminds me of Steve Ozanich in his book talks about the importance of the arts for a lot of people. And art can mean a lot to a lot of different people, because art doesn't have to be painting. Art can be podcasting. But being embedded in something, some kind of a task that is using that part of the brain, tends to, you know, people don't, they don't have the time to focus on their back or their knee or whatever. They don't have the mental expenditure for that because it's going entirely into this task. And that sounds like what you're talking about too.
Definitely. And to give an example that's not me, because it's easy just to keep giving my own examples because it's me. But I've noticed more and more with clients that have strengths like there's intellection, means they like taking in deep information and processing it. And then there's input, which is people who absorb information and then give information out to people. That you want these people on your quiz team. Or analytical, again, a really big thinking theme. These thinking themes, when they discover they have TMS, they turn it all towards TMS research.
Yep.
And I get why, because they feel alive when they're absorbing and digesting and processing information. So it's almost like addictive, like we can't help but to use our strengths. It is so natural. But just to realize that they're using their strengths purely only on researching TMS helps them to go, oh gosh, I used to read novels. I used to, you know, I used to do all these other things that would stimulate them intellectually. And so one of the first things I say to all clients is put away everything that you have that's TMS related, put it in a cupboard so you can't see it. Get off the Facebook groups for a while and go and live, like go and use your strengths for what they're supposed to be used for.
What? So you get the strengths for the clients. Are you then making recommendations of like actual things to go and do? Like you had said, go out and live. Is there something beyond that where you say go out and live and do this or do these things? Like how do you get to that with them?
So it depends on the client. And I would, because it's coaching, they would usually come up with their own idea. So for example, today I was working with a woman who's got strategic, and I said, you know, how are you using your strategic right now? And she was like, well, I plan holidays because it keeps me busy. And so that's what she's doing to use strategic. So I was like, well, what else can you do that can, you know, where you can use your quick thinking theme? And they'll go away and think of their own things rather than me prescribing. Because if I prescribe something to someone, they would never do it. I would say something like, have you thought about using your input in a creative way? And then they would, like this lady said, oh, I could maybe do mosaics, for example. I try not to give direct suggestions as much as possible,
because they got to get there themselves, basically.
And everyone's different. Or often what I'll do is at the very beginning I'll say, what did you love to do as a child? you know, when you were little, what really, really lit you up? And then I'll loop back to that at the end and say, well, you used to do it as a child. How can you get that energy back now? Can you do even a fraction of that, just 5 minutes a day, to try and, yeah, to try and start living again?
What, so one thing I'm really curious about is that something that people that have gone through some kind of an episode of, not even an episode, a entire season of chronic health issues or chronic pain, then they discover mind body work or TMS work or whatever we want to call it, and they're past that. Their symptoms have gone backwards, they don't exist anymore, whatever the case is. But then just about everybody has some kind of a period of time where those come back, or they get new symptoms somewhere else, or something like that. How can you what have you done? And maybe you haven't had this happen to you, but I would imagine you probably have. Is your approach to dealing with that any different than somebody maybe that doesn't use the strengths language? How do you leverage a flare-up of pain or some kind of a new symptom or something? How do you leverage the knowledge that you've gained?
Yes. You mean like if I suddenly get a migraine these days,
yep.
What do I do?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, that's a good example. So using the strengths, what I would do is I have them, I know mine obviously because I'm using them day in, day out, but they're also on the fridge along with my husband's. So I'll look at the strengths and I'll think, which one am I not using enough? And then I'll see, I'm not achieving anything right now. Like I have the achiever strength, I'm not achieving anything.
Yeah.
Okay, then I need to go and achieve something, even if it's go for a run, or I do a lot of sport. So like, how can I use achiever just so that I feel like I've achieved something today?
Yeah.
Or which am I using in overdrive? And I'll look down the list and I'll realize. Or like, I'll give you an example the other day. when people are stressed, they go to their strengths and they use them so much, it's so annoying. it is really annoying. I have a discipline, which means I like putting systems and processes in place. Even if a system and process is not needed, you can rely on me to put one in place. But when I'm stressed, I will walk around the house kind of going, who left this here? This isn't supposed to be here. And I'm like grabbing things and I'm like, it's awful. And then, but now, instead of thinking like, I'm just really stressed, I think, yeah, this is me using my discipline in absolute overdrive. There's something going on with me right now. What's wrong? And then that's when I'll sit down and journal or whatever.
Yeah, that does sound pretty similar. One of the things that you said in your email is that it sounds like there's similarities in kind of how you see this in your approach and how I see this in my approach. And what you're describing sounds a lot like I've said in the past that whenever I start to obsess over anything, doesn't matter what it is, like if there becomes a level of indecisiveness about something, and it could be anything, like there was a, like last summer there was switching motorcycles, and in the fall there was switching cell phones. And if I find myself doing, like going into this like abyss of research or continuously thinking of a worst case scenario if I make the wrong decision, that's when I know there's something that needs to be addressed. Like that's kind of what really tips me off. And it sounds like what you just described.
Yeah, but it would be really interesting for you to figure out, why do you have that indecisiveness? Which, you know, what I was saying, like TMS says indecisiveness, and that's a bad thing. But is it because you have deliberative and you really love thinking? Or is it because you have responsibility and you want to make sure you don't let anybody down, or is it a competition because you want to have the best decision?
Yeah.
Or is it achiever because you want a quick decision? Do you see? So once you can get underneath the overthinking and see the reason for the overthinking, then you're more in control.
Yeah. I really like that approach and that thought, because forever what I have thought, well, not forever, let's say the last 5 years since I've wanted it, like since I've become a wannabe therapist, what has come to my mind if I'm sitting there thinking, like, if I'm having an internal struggle about something, cognitive dissonance, basically, over two divergent things that I'm going to make the wrong decision, the fake therapist in me goes and starts to think, oh, well, that must be because I made some horrific decision. You know, I chose the horrific decision at some point in my life. I made a bad decision and I just don't want to make a bad decision. But as I've thought back and I've reflected on 36 and a half years of life, I can't think of a time where I made a really bad decision. Maybe I've been lucky, but I feel like I haven't made a really bad decision about anything. But I like your approach a lot better because it doesn't have to be this black and white thing. There could be a variety of reasons. And then how can I use those and enhance and use them as a strength? I think it's perfect.
Yeah. And, you know, I think with TMS, it's interesting because I do think there's a need to go back to the past. And I do think there's a need to do journaling. But for me, journaling was my thing. And I think other people, maybe they need to do whatever their thing is. But the reason I like StrengthsFinder is because it's like right here, right now, it's present, and then it moves you forward. And I always start with strengths with clients before I go to the past, because I think you've got to be in a strong position within yourself of like, who am I, before you can start digging around too much.
Gemma, this has been so much fun learning something new. Like I said, I'm going to email you in the next couple of days because I would when you had offered to do the strengths assessment, is this something where like you send me a link and I go through and do this thing, or is this on the phone, or like what's the usual way that you would work with somebody on that?
So you would just do it by yourself in your house. I would send you a link and you just answer the questions and then you get your report.
Yes. Yeah. Please do. Cause I would love to, I'll find some time this weekend, at some point to take it. You said it takes like 45 minutes to go through.
Yeah, unless you've got TMS personality traits, and you could probably do it in 5 minutes.
Maybe even 4 minutes. If somebody is listening to this somewhere on earth and they say, man, this really resonates with me, where can people find more information on you?
They can find me on my website, which is just my name, gemmamcfall.com.
So that is GEMMAMCFALL.com. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Exactly. I'll link that in the show notes. So if on your podcast app, you can just tap back to the information, scroll down, and you'll find the link. It'll be at the top to be able to find out more. Gemma, this was lovely. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Eddie.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Gemma. Take care. Bye.
Bye.